What's going on, everybody? This is Andrew LaCosta with the Most High Show. Today, we are sitting with Allie K. Campbell.
Hi, guys.
Today, we are talking about getting sober at a young age, being creative in recovery, being in the LGBTQ plus community. We're also talking about the hardest thing about recovery, spirituality, and having fun in recovery. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
So before this, we were talking on the phone, and we were talking about what it was like getting sober at a young age. You got sober at 26, right?
26, yeah. I first tried to get sober at 16, and that did not happen. Then I tried again at 18, and that did not happen. And then eventually I took to it at 26, so it took a little while, but
10 years later.
Yeah. A whole ass decade later.
Yeah. Hey, it's better late than never, you know?
And yeah,
it's still early. Actually, I was the same way. At 16, I went to my first rehab. Stayed in inpatient for 7 months. It was more like a behavior camp type thing.
Right.
But I went there because I was abusing drugs. And the day that I got out, I actually just went back out and started smoking weed again.
Yeah.
Started drinking or whatever. And then at 20, I tried again. And then at 21, I tried again. And then at 22, I found this other place that I've been at for 3 years. I actually just graduated from that,
nice.
From that rehab. It was like a long-term support group, pretty much.
Congrats.
Thank you. So I definitely get it. You know, at being, trying to get sober young is like, you don't know what you want, I feel like.
No. I think that there's like, I mean, our brains don't even fully end up like developing, I don't think, until we're 24, 25 years old. So like, I can't, like the people who get sober at like 15, 16, 17 years old, I'm like, you're on another level. Like you're a miracle to me because like, how did you do that? Like, how did you do that when like your brain isn't even fully developed yet?
I think in some ways they have an advantage, you know?
Mm.
Like I know a couple of people at 16, 17 years old that I have a year sober.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing to see.
Yeah. So what was like the hardest thing about getting sober at such a young age?
Well, the first time I genuinely tried to get sober, I would say the first genuine attempt, although it really wasn't that genuine, when I was like 18 was because I got a DUI and I was put in like IBCR classes and like, you know, an AA meeting, and I just wasn't ready to like listen to it at all. So like at that time, I would say the hardest part was even like remotely opening my mind to the idea of it. Like it was just not like, you were not selling me on sobriety. And like I had done a decent amount of damage at that point to where it would make sense from a logical place to say like, hey, maybe your life would be a little bit better if you were sober. Like maybe you wouldn't have so much trouble. Maybe you wouldn't be suicidal and depressed all the time. Like, you know, things would have been better, but I was still at the point where it was just like, it was too hard for me, I think, because I really could not envision a life without alcohol or drugs. I just couldn't. Like it didn't exist in my world. But when I was like older and a little bit more mature, when I was like 26, I think the hardest part was probably the fact that I was going through like a major breakup at the time. So like not having my go-to coping mechanisms to deal with that. Like any other time in life after like going through like the loss of somebody or like some kind of like really emotional experience or something, you know, that feels traumatic, I would immediately run to drugs or alcohol. So not having that was very difficult and very like foreign to me. Yeah. That was really, really tough. And on top of that, I think probably just like learning how to have a social life sober was really kind of weird and a culture shock. But I mean, what about for you? What was the toughest part for you?
To be honest, I think it was the fact that I didn't think that I could have fun in recovery. Mm. You know what I mean?
Because
like I was so young, you know, I was 24. I was 22 when I first joined this place. And then at first I realized like, okay, I can have fun. But something just kind of like, I had this resentment with God, you know, and it was like, and the 12 steps, it's like God, higher power,
yeah,
like, kind of drilling it into you.
Right.
You know, and I was just like, I'm good. Like, I don't want this. That's what steered me away the first three times. You know, I saw God on the walls and I was like, I'm good. Like, I'll do this myself. You know, and I tried to do it myself and it didn't work.
Right, that's how it goes.
Yeah. Well, when I really did realize like, okay, I can have fun in recovery is when I actually started giving it a shot. It wasn't like right away. It wasn't something that I just like, it just clicked. You know what I mean? But the more that I have fun in recovery, the more I stayed sober.
Yeah, for sure. And just to like touch on the God thing, I definitely had that experience too. Like that first AA meeting that I stepped into when I was like a teenager, like from the ages of, I don't know, 12 to like 24, I considered myself an atheist or like an agnostic. Like I wasn't raised in a super religious home. Like my parents were very lenient about religion. Very thankful for that actually. And they let me like experiment with whatever like philosophies or religions that I wanted. But when I walked in and like you said, saw the steps and saw like the word God, it's like my mind immediately shut off. Like it took a while to become, I guess, more open to spirituality and more open to a higher power to even consider sobriety or a program or anything like that, because I was just so like closed-minded at that point. Yeah. But like even, and with like the fun thing, it's wild because when I was getting drunk and high, like that's all I thought was fun, was like getting drunk and high. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like the things that I was doing, because in reality, like the only thing that I was really doing was like, can I curse? Should I not curse?
Try not to, but you know, it's
the only thing I was doing was like messing around and hanging out with like with other people who were doing the same thing. Like we weren't doing any like particular activity that was like a hobby of mine that I found really fun. Like when you're at a bar, the only thing that you're doing is drinking. Like, so it was kind of just like, after I got sober, it's like, well, I don't even know what I find fun, because the only thing that I ever did in my spare time was like get drunk or high. So how am I supposed to have fun without the only thing that I've ever found fun in the past like 10 years? It was like really a very like stressful question to have to answer for myself.
Yeah. It's almost like you had to go on this whole spiritual journey just to figure out what you think is fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's like, a huge part of it.
Yeah. You have to like go try new things and like go get uncomfortable, because there's a lot of things that's at first, when you first do these things, it's like, it's not very comfortable.
Right.
Even though like you're going out to try and have fun, it's still not comfortable because you've never done it before.
Yeah.
You know, so it's scary. It was like the first time I went ziplining, like I was terrified.
I want to do that so bad.
Oh, so I was in Puerto Rico, like I was actually getting high during this point, but I was in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And they have like one of the longest like zip lines in the Caribbean.
Right.
And I was like terrified at first. I was like, I don't want to do this. And I did one, I did the small one.
Yeah.
And I was like, I love it. And I kept going on more.
Oh, so you were literally getting high.
Yeah. But like that's like kind of what I equated to, because I didn't know I was gonna like it.
Right.
You know, now if I find a chance to go ziplining, like, which I haven't done in years. I actually haven't done since I got sober. Hmm. But, you know, like, I had so much fun doing it. It was like, it was uncomfortable because I was scared, you know, but once I walked through that fear and I did it, it was like, okay, this is really cool. Like, I want to keep going.
Yeah, yeah. There's something exciting about that. Like, that feeling of kind of like being nervous and walking into like a new situation that you're not comfortable with, because for me, it's like, it's so rare to feel like a very genuine, like heightened emotion, like that's based on like an experience. Like I can feel super depressed, or I can feel super like manic, but that those aren't like necessarily like coming from anything that happened. Like if I'm like ziplining, like I know that adrenaline and that energy is coming from the thing that I'm about to do, you know, so it's almost like appropriate emotion. And it's kind of like fun to be able to say like, hey, this is this kind of like really unfamiliar thing for me, but I'm gonna do it anyway. Like that experience in itself of just like doing something you're not comfortable with, I've learned to find fun in that, which is bizarre to even say. Like if somebody's like, hey, what do you find fun? I'm like, oh, just feeling uncomfortable. Like that's my thing. Like, but it's true, you know?
Yeah. It's like, that's I go out of my way now to get uncomfortable.
Yeah. Same.
You know, which I never would have done before, you know, cause right. It's like get uncomfortable. Mm-mm. I'm good.
We went out of our way to feel more comfortable.
Yeah. By drugs and alcohol. You
know? Yeah.
And even clubs to me, like when I was getting high, they were uncomfortable.
Oh, for sure.
And I didn't really go to many because I was like, I don't dance. I don't like dancing. I have like no rhythm. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I don't want to act a fool. And
right. Now
in recovery, like I don't go to clubs in recovery, but right. I do go around dancing. Like,
right.
Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, just because why not? You know,
right.
Like, it's uncomfortable. I don't like doing it. So I'm going to go ahead and do it.
Yeah. Perfect logic.
Yeah. It makes no sense to anybody else, but to us, you know,
makes
like,
sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what I love about, it's part of what I love about recovery. You know, it's like, it just gives you so many more options. I feel like.
For sure.
You know? So I know we touched on spirituality a little bit. I kind of want to go back to that.
Yeah. Let's get into it
real quick. Because I just had this, like, I was talking with somebody that I just met yesterday, and we were talking about like spirituality and all that stuff, and I ended up like talking to her until like 4 o'clock in the morning. Like,
I love those types of conversations.
Yeah, I was not expecting it to like last that long. Like, I just met her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was just really cool, and I had this like spiritual just kind of experience with this whole new person, you know what I mean? I just left this rehab that I've been at for 3 years, you know, and then all of a sudden this happens, you know?
Hmm.
And it's kind of weird how, you know, we both said that one of the things that kind of steered us away from recovery was that higher power piece. Was that spirituality mm-hmm. piece? Like, what does your spirituality look like today?
So I just cracked open my big book yesterday for what feels like a very, very long time, because I was in a big book meeting. So one of the things that I had written down was that, and this isn't like my original quote by any means, but it said, faith, like love, is an action. So for me, like, faith and spirituality it's the actions that I take to be in a place that feels spiritual in the way that like I define it. So, and that can be action and inaction, right? So like every morning I get up and the first thing I do is like go for a 45-minute walk. And while in and of itself, that's not like a spiritual act, connecting with nature, even though I'm in the middle of Jersey City, so that's, there is no nature here. There's like garbage and feral cats, but like, that's fine. Just like getting outside and like feeling the fresh air and like being able to move my body, like that's a mini spiritual experience for me. And then like as soon as I get back, like I meditate for 15 minutes, I journal, and then I read some kind of like uplifting like self-development or like literature, anything like that. And like that little process that takes less than like 2 hours out of my morning is like my way of connecting with like the universe and connecting with the energy around me, because it's one of the only times throughout the day that I'm making a very like conscious effort to do something for myself and with myself that isn't tied to any like material benefit or anything like that. Like the only reason I have for doing those things is because they make me feel more whole and more connected to the things around me. So it's like, it feels very pure, I guess you could say. And I think from like a maintenance perspective throughout the day, I try to stay as conscious as possible to the thoughts that I'm having, the behaviors that I'm doing, like how I'm affecting other people, because I genuinely feel like you can't say that you're in a, well, you could say it, but I don't know if you mean it, that you're in like a spiritual place if you're actively doing things that are like harming others and you're aware of it and you're continuing.
Yeah.
Like I understand that we all hurt people. It happens, but once you know, then you do better, you know, or you try, or you try to like get past that point rather than like continuously like causing pain. It's kind of like a step 10 thing. Like if you're doing that like inventory every day, like you don't want to, you know, write down in that inventory like screwed up again, like did something really shitty again. You know what I mean? Like you kind of want to be able to say at the end of the day, like, I did my best not to hurt anybody today. And like, that feels like a spiritual practice for me.
That's so.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it seems like it's a lot of meditation and just kind of self-awareness almost.
Yeah. Sometimes I think it's too much self-awareness, to be honest.
Well, before we had no self-awareness, or we just didn't care.
Right.
You know, so now
the last thing I wanted to be aware of was myself.
Yeah. So now it's kind of like a living amends to ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, it's to be self-aware.
Yeah.
It's to work on that step 10, you know, the majority of the time.
Or
all the time.
Yeah, the best of our ability.
Yeah, to the best of our ability. I'm a big motivational speaker or speech guy. So I like in the mornings, part of what I do is like I'll listen to a motivational speech just to get my head right.
Yeah.
You know, so that's part of what my morning routine is.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like, I started doing it like last year, and then I just kind of, that day was just like really good. Just kind of that in the forefront of my mind, you know? So I just kind of started, I do it as much as I can, not like, not, you know, perfect. So I don't listen to things every day. I don't do everything every day. I'm a human being and an addict. Same. So, you know. So we talked about getting sober at a young age, and you have a YouTube channel.
I do, yeah. it's kind of weird to admit that, you know, because it's like.
I actually subscribe, so I think it's.
Thank you.
It's pretty cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it's bizarre to think about, just because like the progression of this was like, so we're talking about like, you know, learning how to have fun in sobriety and like getting sober at a young age. And part of finding what I found to be fun in sobriety and like in my like adulthood was really like going back to like before I started drinking and drugging and thinking about like what kind of things that I like doing before things got out of hand. And I was really into like filming stuff and like making videos, and like I was obsessed with getting on the Real World. Like God only knows if I got on the Real World, I would probably be a meme by now. Like I would be a mess. But like I loved the idea of like being on camera and being behind the camera, and just like I wanted to go to film school. Like it was all something that I was like very, very interested in. And then it got put in the background when I started drinking and drugging, because that just became the priority, you know? Yeah. But after getting sober, I didn't even like consciously put that together of like, oh, this is something I really like doing. Like, it was just the universe aligned in a way that was kind of like, you should create this YouTube channel because you bought all of this equipment for your new job, and why not? And I was just like, all right, like, yeah. And now it's been like a year and a half later, and I've made like almost 100 videos. I've like had the chance to speak at live events in New York City. Like, it's been a really wild ride that I never, ever, 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 ever would have had the balls to pursue anything like this while I was active. Because I was just living in such a place of fear that it was just like, I would never have been able to, well, obviously I'm not going to be able to do a YouTube channel when I'm getting drunk every day, but like, I wouldn't have even pursued, right. I wouldn't have even pursued the, like, the creative part of it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I wouldn't have had time, and I just wouldn't have had the same, I guess, like, courage that I kind of grew in sobriety.
That's cool. I mean, we have, I said it before we went live, but we have a lot in common, because, like, that's pretty much, you know, like, when I was in active addiction, I was, like, making videos and making music videos, and I'm an artist also, so I was, like, making music or whatever. But it all kind of got put, you know, like, drugs and alcohol were the main priority. You know, if I wasn't messed up, I wasn't making music.
Right.
Or I wasn't making videos. So it was like, when I got sober, I started making music again. And then I got introduced to the Most High Show. And then I started making videos again. You know, and all this stuff just kind of aligned to where, like, now we're sitting talking to each other. Both creatives, both young in recovery, both, you know, wouldn't have these opportunities had we not gotten sober.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's really, and we both like Justin Bieber.
Of course, you gotta throw in Bieber.
it's just really cool that, you know, that being sober has opened as many doors as it has for both of us, it seems like.
Yeah, it, and like that right there is like on spirituality, like that, yeah. Like, that little experience that you just described to me is more, explain spirituality better than I could with my words. Like, the fact that two people from two separate places who have two different lives somehow like ended up together for whatever amount of time to like have this discussion about recovery, despite everything that they've been through. Like, to me, there's no other really way to explain that kind of thing happening other than something like way bigger, way more powerful, like working among us or for us, you know?
Right. Like,
it's pretty cool.
There's no other way to put it. It's just spiritual.
Yeah, for sure.
It's God or higher power or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
Yeah. Personally, I call him God.
I call her Cosmic Mama.
There you go.
Yeah.
Please, Cosmic Mama.
Yeah, I'm like, listen, Cosmic Mama, like, you got to get with it today. She's like, you need to get with it. I'm like, right.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry, ma'am.
Yeah.
I like that. So, you are you, what are you exactly?
I'm thinking we're talking about the LGBTQ thing at this point, right? Yeah. There's so many ways to answer that question. You know, I'm like, I'm a YouTuber, I'm a Libra, I'm a freaking writer. But in terms of that, I guess if we really want to label it, I consider myself like pansexual, meaning I can be attracted to women, I could be attracted to men, and I could be attracted to anybody who falls in between or doesn't identify as either a male or a female. So people who identify as like non-binary or like anything that isn't male or female. So basically I'm just very open to people, despite their, you know, biology and despite their gender identity or their sexual orientation. However, I prefer very pretty feminine women. So there's
the way I see it is you just love people.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
That's what it is.
That's
which is kind of exactly how we all should be. You know, we just
all
love people. Yeah.
So
tell me about what that's like in recovery, because I know this is something that, you know, is should be talked about more, I feel like.
For sure. It's interesting because a lot of people in the LGBTQ plus community are more susceptible to substance abuse than like our straight counterparts, right? And I think that because of that fact, getting into sobriety is, I don't want to say it's tougher because everybody has their own struggles, but it's a very different experience. Because like being in like the gay scene, especially in New York, which is where I did like a lot of my drinking and using, that's like one of the only places that queer people feel comfortable like meeting others, because there isn't any other spaces dedicated to LGBTQ people. Bars are like the most accessible, they're the easiest to talk to somebody at because you have that kind of liquid courage. And because of that, a lot of us end up relying very heavily on the use of drugs and alcohol and feeling like the only place that we can connect with other people like us are in these dingy bars. And like the sad part of it is like that's true to an extent, because there isn't like, you know, if you're straight, right, like there's a decent chance that you might be like a single good-looking guy and you're walking through like, I don't know, Walmart, and you see a woman and maybe you guys like both touch the friggin' energy can at the same time and you guys spark up a conversation and things happen. Like gay people gay people don't feel like they have that same opportunity, so they feel like their pool of meeting people, especially romantically, is very limited. And it just so happens that that limited pool is, you know, full of drug and alcohol abuse and very sick people in that sense. It's been interesting trying to find a way to like connect with other queer people in sobriety, because they're not easy to find, honestly. So I think that's part of what I'm doing with the channel, is like trying to like gather them all, like come to me. You know,
I like that. So let's dive a little deeper into that, right? Let's dive a little deeper into like kind of your story of did you always know that you were?
I would say I kind of realized that I liked women when I was probably like 7 or 8 years old. Not women, I liked girls at that point. Yeah. But like I more so just knew that I didn't feel the same way about guys that my friends did. And I noticed that I got more nervous around girls, and that I had like crushes on girls. And so I knew from like a pretty young age, but I didn't know, like I didn't genuinely know what that meant. Yeah. And by kinda the time I was like, yeah, like I didn't really understand the concept of like sexuality or like attraction. Like it was all very innocent. And I came out as like bisexual when I was like 13 or 14 years old to my mom, and it went over like pretty well. Like people have horror stories, and I'm like very, very grateful that I have an extremely supportive family, extremely a supportive friend group when it came to that. And I just kind of like, I don't know, like dove into it after that. Like I was very unapologetically myself. Like I went to a high school with like graduating class of like 2,000 people or like 2,500 people, and I was probably one of the only three out gay people out of everybody.
Yeah.
Which is so different from now. Like, I feel like everybody's bisexual now. like I feel like not everybody's bisexual. That's a lot, but people are more open to the idea of like sexual fluidity.
Yeah.
Than they were in the past. Like, I remember it being very weird then.
Yeah. Which is an amazing thing, right? Like, people shouldn't be scared to be who they are.
For sure. You
know, like, people shouldn't hide who they are because they're scared somebody's going to judge them.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, to an extent, like, depending on like where you live, like, the fear is like very real. Like, you know, as far as, you know, equal rights go, like, some people in the LGBTQ plus community are like literally facing like hate crimes, you know? Yeah. And in those situations, I completely understand why somebody would be hesitant to be like out and loud and proud, because you're scared for your life. You're scared for what might happen to you. But hopefully, I mean, like, you know, things just get better and things change. I mean, we definitely haven't made the progress that we should have by now, but I think we're working on it. So that's at least a positive thing.
I think it will get better in time. You know, I feel like if you look at just kind of history, like, things have gotten better with time.
For sure.
The more we have leaders that kind of speak out about those types of things, and, you know, it's just, and which is why I think it's important about what we're doing and what you're doing, you know, with your YouTube channel and what we're doing here at the Most High Show, is because, you know, like, we want to highlight those types of things.
Absolutely.
We just want people to be authentically themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And it's like really, really like validating to be able, I don't want to like assume your sexuality or anything like that, but it's really nice to be able to like talk to who I'm assuming is a straight male and like be able to have a very civil conversation with you about this particular topic, because that's far and few between. Like, you know, I tend to not have such a positive experience, or other people tend to not have such a positive experience talking with somebody who at face value is like different from them, you know, but to connect with somebody like that is just, it's very hopeful.
Yeah. Well, I do have, you know, friends that are gay or lesbian or bisexual or whatever they want to call it. You know, I don't personally want to put labels on it, but it just kind of, it happens.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's like us putting a label on being an alcoholic.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the way I see it. It's just, you know, I sometimes tiptoe around these things, to be honest with you, because I'm like,
fair enough.
I don't want to like hurt somebody with, that's not my intention at all.
Yeah.
You know? So
I'd rather tiptoe than bulldoze.
Yeah. But I do think it's really important to have these types of conversations with different people.
Sure.
You know, because the more that other people get their stories out there, the more that it just kind of becomes normal.
Yes.
And the more it becomes normal, the more people are going to be okay with being who they actually are.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just about like normalizing things that are maybe like different from what the majority experiences.
Yeah. Or from what the normal used to be.
You know? Yes. Yeah.
Like, you think about coronavirus now, it's like the new normal is to wear a mask.
Right. Yeah. That's a whole other
issue. Yeah, we're not getting into that.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But that's it. To me, like, it just needs to be, I just want people to be themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care if you're bisexual, if you're gay, if you're lesbian, if you're pansexual, like, I don't care. If we connect and we're cool and you respect me, I respect you, we love each other, that's all I need.
Yeah, respect is huge. Respect is huge.
Like, I don't know, and until when I know you, that's when I'll see if I like you or not.
Right.
You know, like, it's not going to be based off of race or gender or anything like that, or sexuality or whatever.
Right.
So I want you to kind of like, is there anything else that you want to say about that?
No.
No? Cool.
No.
Actually,
one thing. So like, if for whoever's listening, if you're looking for any queer-friendly meetings, Gay and Sober, I think it's gayandsober.org. If you just type Gay and Sober, they're usually like the first one to come up. They offer online and physical, it's a list of all of the LGBTQ and LGBTQ friendly meetings for AA, NA, CMA, Al-Anon, like all of them for every single state and like all over the world. Like it's an amazing resource. So like, if you're ever looking for that kind of thing, definitely check that out. And also like subscribe to me on YouTube because, you know, your girl is gay and sober on YouTube. So I got to plug that.
I was going to actually have you plug that, but you did it anyway.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, right, let's go ahead and talk to the newcomer, to the person that, you know, that may be sober curious, is a word that's being thrown out a lot. That may be trying to check it out, that may be just new and struggling, that may be coming back from having a stint. You know, what would you say to those people?
I think the first thing that I would want to say is like, find your people. And if you don't find them right away, keep looking. It's kind of like what they say in the rooms about, like, I didn't hear my story until my 15th meeting. You might not immediately connect with somebody else who's sober, but the longer that you stick around, and I don't even necessarily mean like just NA or just A, like just 12-step programs, the longer you stick around in like the realm of sobriety, however you define it or whatever environment that is, the closer you'll get to the people who you vibe with. So that I think is the biggest thing. Like, I very much believe in the quote that the opposite of addiction is connection. So like, for me, the biggest thing is like finding people to connect with that you can like build a network of, you can grow close to, you can learn to trust people. Like, that's huge. Just like having somebody to be able to talk to and relate to, I think is just like invaluable, especially, you know, when it comes to getting sober. And that's like, whether you had like an issue or whether you're just like trying on sobriety, like any of that, it just helps to have support.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
What about you? What would be your like go-to advice for the newcomer?
My go-to advice, I mean, I love what you said, you know, just kind of stick with it. But it's cliche to say, but you know, keep coming back. Right.
Yeah, it's essentially
what you're saying. Yeah. It's a classic.
Yeah.
Because you're right, you know, like, you will find those people that you click with, you will find those meetings, or you will find that thing that will help you in recovery, that will help you stay sober. You know, for me personally, that thing was having fun, you know, because that was like my biggest thing was like, I'm not gonna be able to have fun. Like, my only sense of fun was getting high or getting drunk.
Right.
You know, and once I was able to see like, oh, there's like this whole big world outside of my room being sad and getting drunk all the time. Like, there's this whole huge
who knew
outside of these four walls that I'm in all the time.
Yeah. You know,
like, that I can go explore, that I can go see, that I can go hang out with other people, that I can like just be open. You know? Yeah. Once I realized that, it was kind of like, all right, I'll give this a shot.
Yeah.
Another thing that I've realized for myself is persistence.
Mm.
Because I've relapsed time and time again. You know, I've relapsed a lot. But the one thing that I did was I kept coming back, you know. And now here I am with 14 months sober.
Amazing.
Talking to you. You know, yeah. Cool-ass conversation. Dope conversation. You know, and it's just like we're gonna bring it back full circle. It's a spiritual experience.
Sure.
You know, it's something that wouldn't have happened had we not been sober. So
yeah.
I think that's like my main thing is just kind of stick to it, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And it's like, if you look at it in a way, like the flip side, like if you were to have quit drinking or drugging when it didn't turn out the way you wanted, you would have stopped like a very long time ago. So like in this sense, it's kind of like flipping it. So it's like, you kept trying to make addiction work, so keep trying to make recovery work, even like if it feels weird. The only difference is going to be that, like, eventually recovery is actually going to work, or it's like a seed that gets planted and it grows bigger and bigger, kind of like addiction, except it just dies.
It's kind of like, have you ever heard that expression, "Get sober like you got high"?
Yeah.
It's exactly.
Yeah.
You
know,
just keep doing whatever you can to get sober, like you would have kept doing whatever you can to get that next drink or drug.
Exactly. You know,
like I would have done anything,
right,
to get more alcohol or to get more coke.
Yeah.
And now I have to do anything in order to keep the life that I have and maintain it and continue growing in sobriety.
For sure.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's been really cool. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. This has been an awesome conversation. It's been very refreshing.
Yeah. So hopefully we can talk soon and have you back on again.
Yeah, I'd love to collaborate and maybe get you guys on the YouTube channel and see if we can do like a cross thingy. Oh, yeah.
That'd be
pretty cool.
Let's try that.
All right.
All right, cool.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you.